This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is the besotted Pride of West London podcast, and it's our last pre-season roundup podcast. In fact, it's actually our first pre-season roundup podcast because we've not been around very much this pre-season. We've been taking a bit of a chill pill. We've had a bit of a mad post-season. The end of the season came a little bit too mad for us. Like I said to you, we had the playoffs, which finished late, and then after the playoffs we had... What do we have? We had the Euros, and after that, it's like, oh no, the season's coming, so we've had a bit of a chill pill. I've been away, went down to the South Coast, and I went to the East Coast as well, and it's taken me a few weeks for me just to decompose, just to chill out, and now I'm feeling a lot better. Now, I'm Billy Grant, and I'm sitting here in the virtual joint with my mate Laney. How you doing?
I'm all right. I've had a bit of a COVID adventure, unfortunately, but I'm back and not coughing quite as much as... I've been coughing and spluttering for England, so I got stranded abroad as well, which was a bit odd. I went over to see my sister, who lives in Mallorca for a chunk of the year, and did my fly home test and failed, so I had to stay there for 10 days, which, you know, some people will say that's not really a sob story, but I was a bit weak, and I was just glad that I had the double jab, so I was protected from the most of it, and not hospitalised or anything. So I lived to tell the tale. So that was interesting.
You're feeling better now, then, Laney? Yeah,
I am feeling better. I wouldn't say I'm match fit, but I'm podcast fit.
Okay, that's cool. And the word on the street is that you actually. You actually got the Wembley variant, is that correct?
It is correct, yeah, and I've got you to blame for that. You got me a ticket on the day of the game, so I thank you for that.
What, the European Championships final? That I've got to blame you. You are blaming me for getting you a ticket for the European Championships final, yeah?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't have changed a thing, mate. To get an opportunity like that is, it's once in a lifetime. I think being surrounded by 60,000 people, there was always going to be a risk in the middle of a pandemic. So, you know, I went knowing that I was taking a little bit more of a risk than popping down to my local. And, but there was a lot of people that got the Wembley variant that night. And it was an interesting experience just to be there, being part of history. So it was a gamble that I knew I was taking.
That's right, yeah. So I'm glad you're feeling better. And like I said myself, I've had a lovely couple of weeks because I've been trying hard. We've been trying hard between yourself and yourself. You were over in Spain. I was wherever I was, trying to pull things together. And we just found it hard in the end just because there was just so much going on. Being in the Premier League, people knocking left, right and centre, trying to get stuff off of us. And obviously got to do a bit of family time as well. So I went down to the South Coast. hooked up with the South Coast Bees down there. Managed to do a podcast down there with the South Coast Bees. That was quite good, watching the Man United game. So, well, I was going to try and get up for a couple of games, for the Man United game and for the West Ham game as well. But something, I just thought, tell you what, I need to chill. So did a bit of beach time, was there with the kids, with the missus. I went up to Worthing, actually, to go and watch Worthing play Welling in a pre-season friendly with the Colin, the South Coast Bees, Junior South Coast Bee, and the rest of them. It's quite funny, actually. We bumped into one of the bar girls from the Globe yesterday, and she said to me, I saw you at Worthing last week. So it just goes to show you how the Brentford community get around, actually. So Molly was she was at Worthing there, because her other half plays for Worthing as well. So, and I have to say to you, Worthing, they absolutely smashed Welling off the floor. They're in the Isthmian League and they play some wicked football. And obviously that's where Finn Stevens came from. They had three Grealishes in their team, we called them. Number 8 Grealish, number 10 Grealish and number 19 Grealish as well. Jamie Pattenden, I think one of them was. Another one has just gone off to Coventry. So there's all sorts of Grealishes for Worthing. But I'd say if you're ever in that area, go and watch them play. They really do play some good football. And fingers crossed we might be playing a pre-season friendly with them. Well, maybe this season or maybe at the beginning of next season. But that was my summer with that as well, with some old school mates in Suffolk, in a massive mansion in Suffolk as well. And that was the decomposing time that I needed to get back into the swing of things. And we got back into the swing of things. And Laney, I mean, because the Bees, they played quite a few friendlies. I mean, there's the Boreham Woods, there was the AFC Wimbledon, which I went to as well. But there was only three friendlies that I wouldn't say that really mattered, because obviously they all really mattered, but three friendlies that have really given us an indication of kind of where we're going. And that's the friendlies against Man United, the friendly against West Ham, and also the friendly, which was yesterday, against Valencia, weren't they?
Yeah, the club have been very kind of structured. They're very much A-team friendlies now and B-team friendlies. And we've been used to that down the years, when you think you're playing a friendly against Tottenham or Chelsea or whoever, and it's in the 11, and it's a squad friendly rather than an 18 friendly. So yeah, we've really only had three in front of the public matches, which have all been really impressive, to be honest with you. The Man United game was obviously, people were going to remember that for the two brilliant goals, or the four brilliant goals, but the two brilliant Brentford goals. And then West Ham, I thought we acquitted ourselves very well, and we are only separated in that match by a bit of Benrahma magic, and curling one in into the top corner of the net. Which was a match winner, but we looked good, and then we looked good against Valencia yesterday. So I think Brentford fans have kind of been relieved to some extent that we've kicked on. I think in our performances, and we're fluid in changing formations during the game. The players that have come in have kind of looked good on the eye immediately. There's still lots more to come, lots more familiarity with the new signings. People like Miles Per Harris, we've heard great things about. We've not seen a lot of minutes from him yet. Frank Onyeka, again, he made a big impact. People singing about him already. And then obviously Christopher Aja, it's the first time we saw him properly yesterday as well. And it's all shaping up. It's looking really good, Bill.
I'm just wondering, because we played these three friendlies, and I mean, you've seen all of them. Okay, the one thing about sort of going up a league is that we saw this last season, the season before, everything's on TV. And now, like going up there, we've actually got friendlies. Two of the three friendlies were on TV. Oh, no, all three of the friendlies, I think, were on TV. One of them was on Manchester United TV, and the other two were on BT Sport. I'm just wondering, out of the three friendlies, which one did you enjoy the most?
Probably the Man U game. It was the highest profile one. I think that was a familiarity exercise in the team going to a stadium like that. I know we've played in big stadiums, but I think it's like the stature of the club and the players that were lining up against us. I think that was a proper learning curve, that one. I did really enjoy yesterday. Valencia. Let's not ever forget that we've just beaten one of the strongest teams in La Liga. Team that's plays in the Champions League regularly, Europa League regularly, very evenly selected and matched team to us, I thought. We played some sparkling football, and Ivan Toney didn't feature, so I'm not sure whether he would have played differently if he was there. But again, I just think, you know, although he was missing, it gave Marcus Force minutes, and Devo Soglu came on in his place. Players that will probably be more likely than not fringe squad 18ers, but everyone's going to have to contribute. And I think we saw that the team are ready. They're ready for the season. They're ready to take on Arsenal. And you heard, you know, in the fan clips that, you know, you recorded after the game yesterday, people are quietly confident, not nonchalant, not arrogant, not taking anything for granted. But we've seen with our own eyes that the team that are putting on the red and white of Brentford in the Premier League, they are in the right place. They're not out of their depth. They're not sort of in the deep end and need armbands. They are in the right league for their ability, and you know they've got to do it over the whole season now and prove not to be a flash in the pan. But I think, you know, we had a poll on Besotted this week. I think over 1,500 people have voted in it so far. And if you go onto Twitter and you haven't voted yet, you can have a go at that. And I think it's almost 60% of people believe that we're going to be lower half of the table, but in that comfort zone. So, you know, there's based on what the evidence that people have seen with their eyes. So I'll agree with that. I think we'll be all right.
And talking about Valencia, I mean, last season they finished, I think it was 13th in La Liga. So they're, you know, sort of midway down the table. And we talked about this on the post-match podcast from the ground, that you can hear it on post-match podcast, is prideofwest.london. And on that, you'll hear us, all the fans, talking from the ground as well. Also, Rasmus Ankersen is talking about that, giving us his views on a few things. We might have Rasmus on the podcast a little bit later, where we'll have a little clip from that. But on the world rankings, we call it the Benham ranking, the Benham table, where they basically pit teams from all across the world in one big league table based on statistical information. And Brentford are actually 65th in that, you know, SPF is about 67, whereas Valencia are 69th in that, around about 66.8. So they're pretty similar. And just to give you an idea of the teams in and around us, Burnley in and around us as well, just above Valencia as well, just below us, Southampton just below us as well, you know, so basically Brentford, Southampton, Burnley, Valencia, you know, all around the same area as well, PSV around about the same as well, Newcastle around about the same, just a little bit higher. So that gives you an idea at the moment. I mean, this will change when the season starts, of course, but I think you can see the reason why Brentford chose Valencia, because they're a similar team to them playing in a higher level league, and it gives us a good indication as to how we may fare against a team like that. But yesterday was the, interestingly, it was a launch of New Griffin Park, a year after it's actually been opened, which is sort of kind of strange. But again, it's one of those things that they've had to do because of coronavirus, because of the pandemic. And it was meant to be a sort of a big launch with, you know, ex-players and, you know, PAs and all sorts of stuff. Were you excited, Laney?
Yeah, I was proud to be there. You know, it's something that without the pandemic, that, you know, I'm sure it would have been a bigger occasion, a year ago. I thought it was a great buzz around the place yesterday. It was the first time we'd been to the new ground where there was a significant crowd walking along the Great West Road and cutting up and through and over the little bridge. There was a sort of a swell of people, and being in the ground and hearing everyone sing along to Hey Jude, I thought there was it does kick out some noise. Good to see some of the ex-players, and the ex-managers. I think Martin Allen was there. Steve Coppell doesn't really do a lot of personal appearances. Good to see him. And then there's the ex-players, Francis Joseph, Andy McCulloch, and then Dean Holdsworth, and Keith Millen, Terry Evans was there, yeah.
And of course, Marcus Gayle, of course.
Well, we see him every week, don't we? But yeah, I mean, let's not forget he was part of that really good championship level team in the early 90s, and fair play to him. And it was quite sad on a day where we all learned that Robbie Cook had passed away. It was tinged, because, you know, I don't know, I'm assuming most people that listen to this will remember Robbie Cook. Really quality striker for Brentford in the mid-80s, and scored the goal, and it was a consolation goal in the end at Wembley in 85 in the Freight Rover. It was an absolutely brilliant goal. We kind of hooked it over his shoulder and sent the Brentford fans a little bit doolally that day. But I think he was a very, very gifted player. I didn't really kick on to the next level, but in the third division, I think in that period he was really the cause of problems. What did you got good memories of Robbie?
I've got very good memories of Robbie. I think he was in effect sort of kind of one of my fave players around that time, to be quite honest with you. I mean, obviously he played in the team with Chris Kamara was one of my favourite player at the time, but he played in and around that team and around that era. And the one game that, I mean, I remember quite a few games with him, but with his curly blonde hair, but the game that I really remember him is when I went down to Bournemouth, a night game in the Leyland Daff Trophy, the same one that you talked about when we got to the final, and we played Bournemouth in the Southern Final. And if I remember rightly, I think we beat them 3-2. And again, this is off the top of my head, but all I remember is that I think that we went 2-0 up, and then did Bournemouth come back for 2-2, and then Robbie Cook scored the final goal. But all I remember is that Robbie Cook scored the final goal, and I'm pretty sure that he almost came over to the fans sort of on his knees, and he was like, he had his fists up sort of kind of celebrating, and everyone went absolutely ballistic, because again, that was the first time for me that Brentford actually had kind of looked like they were going to do anything, because before that we weren't anywhere. I mean, I didn't support them when they got promoted from the bottom tier in a Division 4 at the time, so they hadn't really done anything for a few years. So for them to have actually got looking through to the Southern Final of the Leyland Daff Trophy, that was, for me, that was the pinnacle of my Brentford supporting career. And I just remember Robbie Cook with his goal and his celebration just doing the business. Yeah, Laney, it's a sad moment for Robbie Cook. We're talking about, though, Dean Holdsworth, and I saw Dean Holdsworth there, and he looked over at the West End, and I started waving towards him, and he sort of kind of semi-waved back, thinking, who's that nutter waving? And I think Marcus sort of said in his ear, that's Bill. And I shouted to him, go, Dean, we've still got your gnome trophy from when you won Player of the Year in like 1991 or whatever it was.
I haven't got it. Have you actually got it still? I have another one made, mate.
Yeah, I think I think in the numerous house moves that you had, it's probably kind of lost itself on its way. But but in principle, yes, he never did collect his trophy from us. And every time we used to speak to him, because obviously we used to talk to him quite a lot, because we used to go husky racing with him on Hampstead Heath. Do you remember that as well as you do? Yeah, which is, a lot of people are thinking, what are these guys talking about? Have they been smoking at this time? The morning? We don't smoke, I'd let you know. But no, we used to go husky dog racing with Dean Holdsworth on Hampstead Heath, as you do. We've got the photographs to prove it as well. But he has got a Player of the Year trophy that he hasn't collected from us, and he's welcome to collect it from us at any time. It's a very ugly little gnome, but it was what we used to give to the players at the time when they won Player of the Year. So well done, Dean.
That's what we used to call Ian Holloway when he played for us, ugly little gnome.
That's right. Anyway, congratulations, Dean. Well done to you anyway. But listen,
and what do you think of, talking about the opening, what did you think of Corrupt FM, Bill? I mean, it didn't quite work for me. I couldn't really hear what was going on, if I'm honest.
Yeah, the thing about it is that, again, as a lot of people may or may not know, I worked in the music industry for years, and one thing that we used to shy away from was doing PAs in football grounds. You always used to get requests for doing PAs in football grounds, but we never used to do them because they never used to work. Because the whole idea of doing PAs in football grounds is that you're going to try and sell records or try and sell yourself to them. And if you do a performance in front of a large crowd and the performance isn't up to scratch, it could actually do you it could set you back as opposed to put you forward. And normally the reason why that happens is that football grounds historically have got really terrible PA systems. So if you're an artist, you normally want to turn up there with either a PA system or a sound system which is matched up to what you do and you're comfortable with it, or like I said to you, the PA system in the place is that, and football grounds are notoriously bad. And I actually did a record, and this is really bad, this is my very early days in A&R, I was actually A&R for Hunter from the Gladiators. Do you remember that, Laney? I remember back in the day, you probably don't remember that, I was a very young A&R at the time, and he did a track called Shaka Boom. You can Google it, right? And he did it with Ruby Turner. So it's Hunter from the Gladiators, Shaka Boom. And we did this track, and it was quite bad, actually. But, you know, we put it out there, and because, like, we were a young record label, just willing to do things. And it was a learning curve for me as well. Like, you know, Ant and Dec on one side, you know, Hunter from the Gladiators on the other side. And then all of a sudden, he was getting all these promo opportunities. And he got this promo opportunity to do Old Trafford. And we were like going, don't do it, Hunter. It's just, no, you shouldn't do it. But he really wanted to do Old Trafford. So we went up to Old Trafford, and he did this PA in front of, like, you know, the Stretford end, like I'm saying, sort of 50 or 60,000 fans, and it went down like a complete and utter lead balloon, and he couldn't understand why. And it was just like, no, this is just terrible, like I'm saying. So no, in traditionally, like I said to you, it's not a great thing to do. With Corrupt FM, listen, they're a good set of lads, they're really funny. To me, the sound system, again, wasn't happening. I couldn't hear what was on the big screen. I couldn't hear what they were saying. And it's quite hard, you know, it's just quite hard to hear and see. So it didn't probably go down as well as it's going to do. But I think it was good for the fans. It's good for the photographs. It's good for the social media. So the experience that we got might not have been 100%. But if you go onto Instagram, onto the Corrupt FM Instagram, they've already put out a reel, you know, from that day. And it looks great because they've just filmed it themselves. Bit of fan, a bit of pitch action, a bit of DJ action. Put it out there to the world. And, you know, hundreds of, you know, millions of people are going to watch that and think that's going to look really great. So inside the stadium, we may not have got the experience, but social media is where it's at, and it'll make people think differently, and they have actually spread the word of Brentford to a wider audience. But anyway, listen, we're going to talk a little bit more about the football in a minute. We're going to take a little bit of a break. We're going to go off, probably have a little bit of a drink, cup of tea, I'd say it is, because it is Sunday afternoon. We'll come back, and we're going to talk about Brentford and the games. So, yeah, so three friendly matches we played, like I said, Man United, West Ham, Valencia, and I think we mainly talk about the Valencia game because we've had a post-match podcast from the Man United game that was done with the South Coast Bees as well, and West Ham, again, you did a post-match podcast last week, which was talking to fans from all different areas coming over, talking about that. So, I mean, we talk about the Valencia game, but we'll also just sort of sum up what your thoughts are, you know, post, well, the end of pre-season as well, because obviously there was other games as well, which have just got us to this stage. But for me, you know, the Valencia game, I mean, the first thing I'm going to say to you is that, just from a fan's perspective, Lainey, because I know you went to the West Ham game, I didn't go there as well, and you were a bit disappointed with the size of the crowd of that one, but there was a decent crowd yesterday at the game. We obviously went to the Bournemouth game where the crowd was probably, you know, less than half that it was today, a different atmosphere as well. But what do you think of, like, inside the ground, the crowd, the vibe inside the stadium?
Yeah, I have been impressed with it. It's it is very concretey inside, let's be honest. You know, no one expected it to be anything other than that. And in the last few weeks, the club have put up some old photographs. I supplied them with sort of 15 pictures. They've made big montages, and which they've put on the concrete blank walls, which kind of in the West End particularly have kind of brightened it up a little bit, and got a there's a reference there to the past, which I think fair play to them for doing that. It's the first time I'd had a pint in the ground, and that was better than I thought. I don't normally have a drink during the stadium time of my day. That's normally my sobering up. I have a couple before and a few afterwards, but during the stadium, I normally sort of lay off. But got there early, obviously, to see the warm up and the celebrations before the start of the opening ceremony game, and I had a pint, and it was good. The beer was good, and I think it was reasonably priced. I didn't have any of the food, so I can't comment on that. But there was a good buzz. It was a good buzz, and it was nice to see some familiar faces. So that's always going to be an option because it's a bit of a walk from where we in our normal watering hole. So I think it's the fifth time I've been in there. And I've always been impressed by the atmosphere. And I think, you know, there's not many dissenting voices, I don't think. I've not really heard or read anyone that really hates it. And I think in this era of social media where people are very, very critical and negative overall, I think we would have heard a lot more of if there was something massive that the club hadn't done, or it was a you know, the view, you know, the atmosphere was bad. I think there are issues. I think, you know, we've got a little bit of an issue, or quite a big issue, where we have got an obstructed view where we didn't before. Whether we talk about that today or we talk about on another podcast, but I think there's like stairwells. They've had to put kind of like screens up, like perspex or glass and metal screens. And if you're sitting near the stairs anywhere in the ground, there's an obstructed view which wasn't there when we picked the seats.
I'm sorry to interrupt you there, because I know you sort of say it's obviously personal to us, but from what I can gather, there's actually quite a few groups of people around the whole stadium who have expressed their unhappiness about this. And the fact is, a lot of people say, oh, this is really boring, but it's quite important, because if you're moving to a new stadium and you were told that you were going to get such and such a view, the last thing that you want is, we used to joke about having the big post in the New Road or in the Ealing Road where you couldn't see the game, you had to look around the post, and you didn't think that you'd be, we'd be getting that in the new stadium. And the fact that, you know, that these screens have gone up, which weren't there when we got the VR glasses, when we went down to the hut. And for us, it's a bit annoying, because we were pretty much had the first choice. We had a pretty much a good choice of any seat in the whole stadium. We could have gone anywhere. And to sort of turn up and find this massive screen with these metal poles that you have to arch your head around and you have to watch a game through a screen is a little bit annoying. So I think that there's going to be a few words had to be had, because you can't have a new stadium with an obstructed view, because that's not the ticket, is it, Laney?
No, absolutely not. No, I wasn't saying it only really affects us, but I think, you know, it's something that's so new, and we probably need to ask around who else has been affected by this, and, you know, actually make contact with us if you are affected by this, because it is significant, you know, that where I sat and where I picked my seat, I can't really see the goal. There's a metal post half, you know, in my eyesight, so it's not great. And, you know, it has to be solved. So if there's anyone else that's, you know, suffered a similar carbuncle in their eyesight when they're sat in their seats, it would be good to kind of like team up and approach a club to see if we can find a solution. But overall, you know, that aside, the games, the build-up games to the season, and I think the atmosphere, specifically yesterday, I think the team that we saw in the first half is going to be as close to the starting 11 for the Arsenal match as anyone's going to kind of give away. I think there will be two or three changes to that 11, but I think the majority of that's kind of the way we're going to set up for the Gunners coming to New Griffin Park on Friday night.
Yeah, I mean, again, the game for me, like I said, didn't go to the two previous big games. Went to AFC Wimbledon, didn't go to the previous big games as well. But stadium, same for me as well. Good atmosphere, terrible view from the seat, you know. But again, we'll come on to that another time. It wasn't terrible view. I mean, you could see half the pitch anyway without having obstructions, which I suppose is not bad. But
if you stand up, it's fine.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, but of course, we're not allowed to stand up. No, of course, exactly. You know what I'm saying. So, well, that's not the point. But anyway, but other than that, like I said to you, the game itself, like I said to you, first half, we talked about this, you know, afterwards. And interestingly, Canos has gone at right wing back. Looks like we're going to be playing three at the back. You know, the fact that we've gone with that, you know, the final, friendly game, you know, with Aya, or Aja as he is, sort of fitting into that. I think it looks like that's the formation that we're going to be playing, you know, with Canos as right wing back, which I did actually do the old eyebrow raise when I saw that. But actually, I thought he had a really good game on Saturday against Valencia. I don't know if he was getting extremely excited because he comes not from far from Valencia, and he talks about Valencia all the time. And he was just, you know, just very, very excited about them. You know, it was just as unbelievable. So he was running around like, you know, like no tomorrow. But I thought he had a really, really good game. Player who I've been very, very excited about this season is Brian Mbeumo, who, like I said to you, he looks like he's having a fresh start. And I think that this Premier League could be a really good thing for him after last season. Okay, he scored, what's it, 10 goals, I think it was last season, which is not as high as he did before, but it's all right. You know, maybe 9 goals or maybe 8 goals, I'm not sure, something like that. And Boomer, who's, I think, 4 scored 10 goals. I think he scored maybe about 8, you know. But he didn't look like the previous Mbeumo, but he is looking back like he is on fire. And I'm really looking forward to see what he does against, sort of, inverted commas, higher class opposition as well. And like I said, impressed by him. And like I said, the other players as well. Halil didn't have as much as game time as he did previously when he did against West Ham, which I thought he looked really good. Did Baptiste come on at all? I mean, he had very little game time this time, if any at all this time, which I think probably goes to show you maybe where he is in the pecking order still, because for him, I think he's come off the back of an injury, so you're not going to rush him into it too much. But he's looked really good in some of the games he's come on for. You know, Marcus Force, I tell you what, watching him in the warm-up, the way that he was putting them balls in the back of the net, he's a wicked finisher, Marcus Force. And, you know, obviously we're going to be playing two up front, and Marcus Force is definitely the man that we're going to start with, I think, with obviously Halil looks like he's going to be coming on for him after 70 or 80 minutes. I think that's the thought of that. But Marcus Force, he certainly knows how to put the ball in the back of the net. But I tell you something, the guy who was on fire on Saturday's game was Yanel. Mate, what a player he is. And I've done quite a few interviews for different publications, different TV companies, you know, The Observer. I think I've got a review. There's a review that's out there today of the season. And I didn't mention Yanel, I have to admit, because I wasn't quite sure where he's going to be fitting in with all these players coming in and out. Will he be in? Will he not be in? But I think seeing how the way that he played and the position that they played him in two sort of slightly different positions at the weekend, where he played further up the pitch in the second half, it's almost like the guy is undroppable, because he's unbelievable. He just keeps going and he goes and he goes. And you've got to give a big mention for that player, because he's, for 500 grand, he's bargain of the century, isn't he?
Yeah, he's an exceptional talent, and he's the sky's the limit for him, to be honest with you. You know, you're right, he's undroppable. He is. It's finding out how he dovetails with Norgard's going to be the interesting one. But as we saw in the second half, they pushed him forward. He had a bit of a freer role to kind of maraud forward. There's a lot of players that are obviously going to be massively, massively excited about being able to showcase themselves in the top division. So, you know, expect that to be a factor in, like, adding another 5 to 10% into performances. I'm not saying, you know, they're doing it for any other reasons apart from wanting, you know, personal pride and wanting to do the best for the club. You know, but Brian and Waymo, again, you're right to highlight, he had a, you know, stop-start season last year. There was times where he was, you know, seriously struggling, and there was, you know, we were questioning whether he should be dropped and this, that and the other. And I think sometimes we just have to kind of relax a little bit. And I think it's the same with Force. You know, we can't be demanding the same kind of, I'm not saying demand, we're not demanding anything from Ivan Toney either. But I think Ivan Toney has been such a trailblazer the last year. And Force, he had a really good early part of last season as well. He's proved what he's capable of, and I'm not quite sure we've found out how to use him best. You know, we can't play the same way as we do when there's just Ivan Toney up top. We have to use him differently, and I think the attacking midfield options, where we've got attacking midfielders that are kind of closer to the forwards, and the ability to thread balls onto him. We can't sling balls in and expect, you know, like Ivan Toney to win them in the air. I'm not saying Marcus Force isn't good in the air, but it's his absolute clinical thunderbolt of a shot that I think is his ace card. So, you know, I'm chilled about him, and same with Halil. We can't unless we bring someone else in as a striker who's more recognised, which I don't think we're going to do because they're bloody expensive. So I don't rule it out, but I think that we have to keep Halil, Devasoglu, Marcus Force and Ivan Toney as our three, like number 9, number 10 players. And really encourage everyone else to chip in.
I mean, we're talking about chipping in, Lainey. I mean, and obviously you mentioned quite a lot there about Ivan Toney, who is our premium striker. He's the one that any time, like I said to you, you're doing an interview, you'd see a newspaper article, especially in this league, because they probably don't know as much about Brentford as they may do about the other teams, but they've all heard about Ivan Toney because he broke the record last season. He scored lots and lots and lots of goals for them, and I think the big question mark for them, and probably for us as well, is whether or not Ivan Toney is going to be able to step up to the mark in this division, which is obviously, you know, what we all want to know. But the question I'm going to ask you is that, I mean, obviously Ivan Toney, he was missing from this game, okay? He was absolutely missing from this game, and I don't want to misquote anybody here, but the rumour that I heard is that there was a little bit of maybe an injury or a bit of a niggle, you know, which he might have had, so they didn't want to to upset anything, so he didn't play that game. Is that what you heard?
Yeah, there was a conspiracy theory as well that he, you know, they didn't want to give too much away to Arsenal. He would have been, you know, thoroughly scouted themselves right up for the game, you know, on Friday. Whatever the case, I mean, Ivan's got nothing more to prove. He didn't really need a run out yesterday. He's fit. It'll be chomping at the bit for Arsenal. If he's only like 98% match fit, the extra 2% is going to come with adrenaline and just the sense of occasion that we're bringing the curtain down on the Premiership season. It's us. We've got the world watching us. So, you know, I've got no worries about Ivan Toney. And also, yeah, I mean, you know, you mentioned him being our premium striker. He's got broad shoulders, Ivan Toney. Actually, it probably suits the rest of the team to have the world just talking about him. If people aren't going to, you know, gin themselves up on the rest of our great players, if they only want to talk about Ivan Toney, just let them crack on. Let him pile all the pressure on him, and you know he I'm not saying he's going to sink or swim. He might struggle for goals this year because he's going to be marked so tight. You know, it might be the fact that he would, you know, he might have to be like the magnet for the defence, so the other players can get a little bit more space. You know, we are under the cosh. There's a big old learning curve for all of us this year. Defences will be able to do a job on us, and the thing with the three friendlies is they've all allowed us to play football. There's been no coming down and shutting, you know, parking the bus or trying to literally grind us down or kind of just absorbing us all and taking the one chance. But we've come up against three teams that wanted to play expansive football themselves, and we've gone end to end pretty much with all three of those. When Premiership points are up for grabs, we might have to be a little bit more savvy and expect teams to come and be aware that we are going to cause and scare a lot of teams this year, and they might have to kind of be a little bit more tighter. And not literally, you know, players in a toe-to-toe football game. So we'll see. But Arsenal are the kind of team that we want to be playing. They only play one way, really. And, you know, there's a good chance that we can get something out of that match.
Yeah, so, and just coming back to that match, you know, interestingly, that was the first game that we've seen at New Griffin Park for a while that, you know, all 22 players on the pitch all took the knee, as they call it, which is which has been a subject of much discussion, especially over the European Championships. And if people don't know, and if you could check it out on, you know, if you want to go to Besotted YouTube on 1992, you know, and on Besotted Pride of West London as well, where I've done numerous interviews for BBC, for TV companies, where I talked about the whole subject of taking the knee, which is a symbol that black people have used to, in effect, highlight the oppression that we have had over the years and the fact that we're not happy with it. And it's a symbol that we, people that haven't listened to this podcast, I'm black, by the way, have used, right? And we've taken it up and we've used that. And there's some people that are not happy with it and they feel that it's their place to actually tell us what to do and what we should, why, how we should actually kind of... raise our fist and say how we're not unhappy, and they're telling us you can't do the knee thing, which for me actually really makes me annoyed, because I'm thinking, who are you to tell me what to do? But I'm not going to go into that too much. But the reason why I say that is very interesting. 22 players have done that. They've had to come back, and Brentford to a certain extent have had to sort of fall in line with the football, the Premier League, who have said, listen, we're doing this as a unit, and this is what we're going to do, and this is the symbol that we're going to do, and we're going to carry on doing it. Obviously Ivan Toney is a player who has reasons that he has decided that he's not going to take the knee. Now, the irony about this whole thing is that, listen, of course, I stand behind Ivan Toney, because, you know, me and him, we have the same type of troubles, we have the same tribulations, we have the same issues that we're fighting against. And if Ivan Toney decides that he is not going to do something for a reason, I know there's going to be a good reason for it. I would like to think there's a good reason for it. I was a little bit confused because he didn't really explain his reasonings too well beforehand. And I was a bit confused because it was a little bit like, I've said it, but I'm thinking, but you actually haven't said it, because I don't really know. But he put out a very long statement only the day before the match to actually explain it, which I think is actually very, very interesting. Because what you've got is you've got a lot of people going, yeah, see, Ivan Toney doesn't like the knee and he's black, so it goes to show you that the knee is the wrong thing to do. Well, he's actually not saying that. What Ivan Toney is actually saying, he's looking at some of these people who are disrespecting the knee and kind of saying, well, to be quite honest with you, it's kind of because of you lot why I'm not even doing the knee anyway, because the fact is that it's not sorting the issue. The knee is never going to sort the issue. He said, in February 21, I made a decision not to continue taking the knee for a number of reasons. I personally have not seen enough positive change that supports black people in football and in society in general, which is an issue that I've had. And I talk about this quite a lot every now and again. I know it knocks a few people, but I don't care. I mention those things. He's saying the same thing. And then he talks about the fact that he says, I was racially abused online on several occasions last season, and I felt I was being forced to act on the crime that's committed against me. Okay? The club, the league, the social media companies and the police all had the evidence and did not or could not proceed with any investigation, which was proven in the Ian Wright case would have probably ended without any form of punishment to the perpetrators. So basically, he's peed off in the same way that I'm peed off, and a lot of other people are peed off as well. And the fact is that all these people are going around saying, ah, yeah, he's not taking the knee. It's kind of like he's not saying the knee's going to solve it. But beforehand, he wants more things to happen, right? Now, the fact is, my point is, I'm saying that it's better doing it than doing the knee than nothing at all, because a lot of people get peed off about it. But the fact is, he's saying, listen, I'm going to do something else. Now, what I'm trying to say is that I think it's very interesting what Ivan Toney, because I think in that statement there's a lot of things actually he hasn't said. It's not what he has said, it hasn't said. He's mentioned a few things. He's mentioned the club, he's mentioned the league, he's mentioned social media companies. There's a lot of things that he's not happy with here. And if a lot of people are going out there thinking, Ivan Toney, man, you're on my side because, like, you don't want to take the knee, it's the exact opposite. He'll be looking at you and saying, actually, mate, don't talk to me, because this, you are a reason why I'm not taking the knee, because I'm so peed off with the whole thing. So people, get back yourselves in your box and try and listen to people like myself, like Ivan Toney and all the other black people out there, to tell you what is making us tick, what is making us angry, and what we want to do to actually highlight this problem, because the problem is still there. And it's not helping you people coming out there and trying to justify your booing, trying to justify all the things that you're doing to actually kind of, in effect, put what we're doing down. That's all I'm going to say on this matter. I'm going to move on. I'm standing with Ivan Toney. I'm glad he said what he's got to say. I'm also glad that he didn't say a lot of things he's going to say, because there's a lot of things hidden under there. And the people that think that he's standing with you, trust me, he ain't standing with you at all. But we move on, lady.
Well, I want to add just something a little bit to that. I'm not, obviously, you know, I can't walk in your shoes. I can support and I can understand. But, you know, as a black fan and as a black player, I can only, as I said, I can only support, and I can't live your life, your lived experience. But I think what Ivan Toney's statement showed is the more he talks about the issue, the better. Communication is only a good thing in this case. He has put up with so much shit that, in my eyes, I would support him. He deals with this exactly as he wants to, because it's affected him more than most. What I would love to see, Bill, is you and him sat down talking about this. You from a black fan's perspective, him as a black Brentford player's perspective, strong opinions, and just chewing the fat for a half an hour, it would be an incredibly positive and enlightening exercise, and I think we ought to reach out and see if we can make that happen.
Yeah, well, listen, you know me, I'm up for doing that. Listen, you know, again, it's all about respect. You sit around the table and you talk with people and you educate, and there's a lot of people out there to be educated, because every time I see this knee thing come up and I look at the comments, you know, I have to bite my lip, because I think these people here, everyone goes, it's free speech and this, that and the other. You have got no clue, because what you're doing is you spend the whole time shouting at other people, right? Arrogantly shouting, your way is the right way, blah, this, that, the other. There's no listening going on. Telling people what they should be doing the whole time. It's just like, I'm fed up of people telling us how we should be demonstrating against racism, doing things that we have experienced all our life and things that other people have never experienced in their life. Then they start telling you what to do. It's just like, come on, please, just give it a break and start listening. Instead of talking and getting on your 280 characters typing thing the whole time. That's what you do. One-way traffic. Start listening and you might start learning. But anyway, let's get back to the game, Laney. The game itself was a wicked game, wasn't it?
Yep, it was a wicked game. Yeah, like two teams that really were all about getting the ball down and playing. And you say... that slightly ironic tongue-in-cheek, because what our equalising goal came from Ethan Pinnock's head, a towering header, and you know, again, we are going to need to see that a lot. It's good to see Chris Aja some people said he was a bit of fault for the goal. You know, I think it was a great finish. I think it was a brilliant dribble. You know, the kid's just signed from Barcelona, the bloke that scored the goal. You know, let's not think that we were looking at another a championship team. That this Valencia team are going to be competing at the top end of the Liga, and they're going to sort of like impress all year. So we did brilliantly to beat them. And yeah, it was great to get it out of the way though. Again, I didn't want the game to finish necessarily. I was enjoying it, but I wanted the final whistle. I want pre-season ended. I want to get on with this now. I am really excited about the season ahead, and I'm going to thoroughly enjoy it. And talking about you mentioned the angry people, the Twitter artsy, the ones that just rant. I'm not going to, you know, we're not going to win every week this season, and I won't have the season ruined, you know, by demanding we have to win every week. We're not get used to that, and rein your demands in a little bit and enjoy the incredible football we're going to see with some of the brightest, youngest, most promising prospects this division's seen for a long time, and our brand of football is really going to contribute to the Premier League. We're not there by fluke. We're not there to make the numbers up. We're Brentford. We should be very proud of what we've achieved so far. The story's not over. You know, the people that run our club have achieved European football in Denmark with Midtjylland. They'll be planning for that. You know, they'll be planning for Brentford playing in the Europa League within 3, 4, 5 years. You know, maybe sooner. Who the hell knows? But you know, I'm looking at that squad and the team that played against Man United and West Ham. We are gonna win games this year, and I just, as I said, I'm gonna enjoy it, and I'm really not in the mood for having it ruined by people that have got unrealistic demands. So yeah, you know, that's my little rant over.
And I'm just going to come back to, because we're talking about the players, and you know, and again. You know, maybe we might come back and actually look at seeing exactly who we think Mike's going to line up against the Arsenal. But, you know, looking at the players and new players, we talked about, you know, Miles Pert-Harris. Again, sort of slightly camo-ish appearance yesterday. He appeared as a substitute beforehand as well. I can't remember which game it was. It might be the West Ham game as well. 18 years old, attacking midfielder, knows where the goal is. The type of player that, like I said to you, if you listen to Pride of West London, we spoke to... Chelsea fans as well, Joe Tweedy, who gave us a really good rundown on Pert Harris as well. Should definitely check it out. And he said he sounds like he's the type of player who we're going to sort of kind of, we're going to get him up and running. And maybe it might be towards the middle to the back end of the season that we actually might start injecting him into the side, like, you know. So he sounds like he's like a promise, you know, who is there for the future. Interestingly, because Brentford actually were very much in for Michael Olise. You may or may not know this. Yeah, we were in for Olise, who ended up going to Cheltenham's Crystal Palace in the end. Reading player, really, really good player. Again, attacking midfielder player. And it looks like Pert Harris is probably the substitute for where Olise was. I'd say probably. Which means that, and also Pert Harris is obviously kind of much more of a junior fledgling though, because Olise is much more of the finished product. So it looks like we kind of haven't replaced him like for like as such. We've replaced him with a player who we're looking to grow into being an Olise maybe in a year or two's time. Also on the new player front as well, we've talked about Asia as well, and again on the PrideOfWest.London, you just check it out. We've got a Celtic fan, Will, who tells us all about Asia, saying that we've got a proper, absolute diamond of a player there, central midfielder, and you saw the way that he came, ball on his feet. He was loving it. He loves going forward. He loves the attack, you know. He really does. And he's going to add something to our attacking play as well from the centre of the centre of defence, which will be interesting as well. And then also, the Kasechi, there is a player as well who we haven't signed as yet, but we have pretty much signed, and he was there on Saturday as well, which is Johan Risa as well, who comes from the club Lorient. And we're not talking about Leighton Orient, we're talking about Lorient from France. And he's a left winger, and he might be the sort of Benrahma missing link that we actually didn't get last year. Meant to be a very highly rated player. And like I said to you, as far as I know, the deal is done, you know, and he's going to be, I think he'll probably be, not playing against Arsenal, but he'll be in the stadium again against Arsenal, because he was in the stadium, for what I can gather, on Saturday as well, which is Johan Risa. But the player that excites me, talking to my friend Simon from FC Michelin, who also is on the Pride of West London podcast, talks about Frank the Tank Onyeka. And he came on, he's obviously been in quarantine for a number of days, so he wasn't going to get a full run out today. They probably thought, is he fit enough? Frank the Tank comes on with what 20 minutes to go, 25 minutes to go, and he was rampaging around that pitch, doing all sorts of, like, you know, just really breaking up the play and really getting his foot on the ball. And he even put his foot on the ball and put the ball in the back of the net as well. And he's a player that I'm really excited about, and I can see him actually starting in the place of Godos as well, who he came in for on Friday against Arsenal. It wouldn't surprise me if Frank the Tank was in there. I think he's a great player. And as we came out the stadium, bumped into my old buddy, my old chum, Rasmus Ankersen, the Brentford director of football. And I asked him a little bit more about Frank the Tank and what he thought of Frank the Tank Onyeka. And Frank the Tank Onyeka. Now, this is a player. Listen, this is the player you found. That we told you about, okay, at the Besotted. Yeah, and then you went running off, and then you decided to sign him. Yeah, yeah. Listen, at the end of the day, listen, look, we're not asking for any commission or anything like that. Just buy us a beer next time you see us, okay? Well,
I'm really glad there's like pure people back left in football here, you know, who just want to contribute. And I think you did that with Frank, and I'm glad. He's finally here.
That's right. If you don't know, we're talking about just PrideOfWest.London. Just check out the Besotted podcast from The Pod with Rasmus Ankersen here and Phil Giles, where we talked about lots of things, and we introduced Frank Onyeka to Rasmus, who was very surprised at the time, and then he signed him a few weeks later, which is very nice. But today he had his first appearance after a little bit of isolation, coming out of obviously he had to isolate being in the country for a few days, and he came out. And he was definitely a bit of a tank, kind of running around in that the back end of that game, because they didn't know really what hit him, did they?
No, he's a very quick player, very aggressive player, and he you know, especially against the ball, he offers a lot. And I think you could see that today. I mean, he'll be a very valuable player for us, especially when we play against team that will have a lot of possession, because he's very good in that phase of the game. And I mean, today he scored. He's dangerous as well. You know, he gets in the box. He finishes well. You know, so I'm sure he's not the last goal he'll have scored for us this season.
So that was Rasmus Ankersen, Brentford's director of football, on Frank the Tank Onyeka. And you'll hear a little bit more if you listen to the post-match podcast on PrideOfWest.London, where Rasmus talks about more things than just Frank the Tank Onyeka as well. Frank the Tank Laney, does he impress you?
He's a real impact player. He's immediately warmed himself. You know, the fans are singing about him already. Three games he's come in on. He's made an impact in the Man United game and the West Ham game, and obviously yesterday with the goal. He's going to get a lot of bookings this year. I reckon there's a suspension in him this year for sure. He doesn't shirk a tackle. He gets involved. He's got an engine. We've heard that, as you said, you know, with the FCM fan talking about him. He's a 90-minute box-to-box player who doesn't suffer from energy drops. He's going to go and go and go, and he's that kind of player. Is something that we're gonna rely on. Players that just don't go missing. Quite happy just to get stuck in all over the pitch. Him and Yanel, you know, are going to epitomise that kind of spirit. He has impressed me. I'm really looking forward to seeing more and more of him. And you know, I only hear good things about the player. So you know, long may that continue, Bill.
Yes, definitely. And there's a couple of players that I think we need to talk about as well, because as you know, besides, we always sort of kind of keep abreast of what's going on, what might be going on underneath, bubbling underneath the sort of kind of underneath the surface. We don't. We're not into putting out gossip, you know, on Twitter and that. You see all sorts of gossip flying left, right, and centre, and we pulled away from that years ago, and we only try and sort of kind of give information when the information is there or thereabouts, you know, using our various sources all over the world as it is. And obviously the story's been going around about Brennan Johnson, the Nottingham Forest player as well, which Brentford have been in for as well. He played for Lincoln in the playoff final, actually. They lost in the playoff final. He was loaned to Lincoln as well, very highly regarded. Lots of teams in for him on this side of the water, and also on the other side of the water in America as well. There's players been looking at him because British players are now actually getting the attention of the MLS, which I keep on saying this to you. MLS is going up in the world big time. I think America have actually broken into the top 10 teams in the world for the first time ever. Or that's going to be announced quite soon, you know, after they actually just won the Gold Cup against Mexico. So like I said to you, you have to watch out what's going on over in America, and they're actually trying to attract decent up and coming talent from the UK as well. And Brennan Johnson is one of these players who they've been looking at as well. But at the moment now for Brentford, I don't think Brennan Johnson is on the radar, just probably due to numerous things like the price that Nottingham Forest are asking for, maybe his agent, stuff like that. So we've got other irons and fires, and normally things like this actually pan themselves out towards the back end of the international window where these things come back into play. But at the moment now, Brennan Johnson's gone a bit of a cooler. There's another player called Jen Kajusta as well, who is a Brazilian player who actually plays for FCM, which is the club in Denmark. Obviously, we've got very good relationships with, and I think the presumption is because he's with FCM, we're going to get hold of him. You know, it's definitely going to be on, but obviously you've also got situation with agents and other people in play, and also other clubs around who might be offering money for him. And if other clubs are offering more money for certain players, then that might mean that he might go elsewhere. So I think the Kajusta at the moment now is not necessarily an option. Also, you've got to think about the fact that we've actually got quite a few sort of central midfielders and defensive central midfielders. There's only so many that you can actually put into your side. So I think that those at the moment now are a little bit on the back burner. So I know there's going to be quite a few rumours flying around about them. But for us, we're not focusing so much on them. We're just focusing on, you know, who else we might be bringing in the next few weeks. But Laney, tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take another little break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about anything else there is to talk about. So, yeah, the interesting thing that we've noticed is as we come into the Premier League, it's really interesting because, listen, we've been in the lower leagues for years, and it's almost like, you know, no matter how big you are in the lower league, you're trying to get people to sort of, as Brentford as a team, to sort of notice you. And you sort of think, yeah, we're doing okay. But the one thing that we have noticed at Besotted is since we've come in the Premier League, there's all sorts of characters come out of the woodwork that we never even heard of. You know, TVs, radios, press, all sorts of different blogs, American blogs from all over the world, wanting to do stuff with us, which is great. But it's almost like it made me realise that literally around the world, there is no interest for anything below the Premier League in general. And that's why when you get sort of fans, foreign fans coming to Brentford, they come there with this really kind of warm attitude and they're really happy to be there because basically they're not going with the flow. They're not going with that Premier League flow. And I really noticed that. It's just really quite mad. And like I said, there's articles flying around. Like I said to you, there's a review in The Observer today that I've done, which you need to check out, which I'm a bit gutted I didn't put Janelle in for, but doesn't matter about that as well. 442 magazine, there's a really good feature in 442 this month as well. Loads of different press times, you know, I've done a few features on Brentford as well. Done another piece for the Times today. Laney was on Radio 5 as well. He was chatting about stuff today. There's going to be some stuff on Sky and BT Sport towards the end of the team week featuring the fans in the run-up to the Arsenal game as well. And then there was this documentary by Premier... It's called Premier League World. By Premier League World, and it was a Brentford special, which was on Sky and BT Sport. But I believe it's popped up on YouTube as well. So, you know, if you want to sort of kind of check that out, it was a Brentford documentary, like I said to you, which is the Premier League World Brentford promotion special. Just Google that and I'm sure that you'll find that on YouTube. It hasn't been taken down. I don't know who's put it up there. It's nothing to do with us, trust me. You know what I'm saying? It's just I've noticed that somebody's been sending that around. But it's worthwhile having a look at that documentary as well, because what it does is try to give a sort of a rounded perspective of Brentford, a historic perspective of Brentford in 25 minutes, which is quite a hard thing to do, which features, you know, input from, you know, historians, from players. Thomas Frank's on there, Ivan Tony's on there, David Rea's on there. They've got a number of fans on there, including myself. Club Shop Anne is on there. The old Tommy Lonnan as well on there as well. And Nick Bruzon as well. And it's just trying to give a rounded perspective of Brentford, where it's come from and where it's going to. So definitely worth checking that out. Like I said to you, either on Sky, download. Just go to Sky and go Besotted on Sky and then you will get all the Brentford content on your Sky queue, or go and search for that Premier League World, you know. What did you think of that, Slaney?
Documentary. I thought it was all right. I thought it was okay. I wasn't blown away by it. I thought the fan contributions were excellent. I thought Rob Jex's historical stuff was great. Enjoyed you and Anne. Enjoyed the Bruzon. I enjoyed the other guy. I don't know who he was actually.
Tommy L. Good guy, as well.
Really good.
Might have to get him on a few podcasts, I think.
Welcome on whenever he wants. Yeah, knew his history, knew his stuff. Spoke brilliantly. Yeah, really. That side of it was excellent, and always good to relive the playoff victory over Swansea. Yeah, because I never get tired of watching that. So yeah, overall, obviously, you know, seeing half an hour documentary about Brentford is only a good thing, and I think a lot of people will learn a fair bit about our club. But you know, it could have been a lot better, I thought, but not as good as Sav's Push Up Brentford documentary. I think that's the benchmark of recent documentaries about Brentford. But yeah, I'm being picky there.
Difficult to get it in such a short space of time to try and cover everything, to be quite honest with you, because I think that could have gone on and on. You know what I'm saying? You could have had the fans talking for more, you could have had the players talking for more, you could have had much more history. But it's quite hard in 25 minutes, like, you know, to try and cover everything, I think. And especially from our point of view, we know a lot of this information. We know what a lot that should be there. But I think for fans from the outside who know nothing about Brentford, even throwing in that little bit of information for them, they're probably thinking, cool, blimey, I had no idea about that. Even my wife was watching it with me and she said, I learned a lot from that documentary, because she doesn't know as much about Brentford as what I do. And I think you've got to probably think of much more mainstream sort of, you know, people as to kind of how it is. But listen,
I really enjoyed Ivan Tony, actually. Yeah, that I did learn a lot there. I mean, him speaking about how important Thomas Frank has been to him. Ivan Tony doesn't say stuff just for the hell of it, you know. So there was a lot of heartfelt warmth and respect to the Brentford head coach. So yeah, really enjoyed that.
Yeah, and talking about, you know, old school, talking about where Brentford have come from, you know, there's an exhibition opening up, a Griffin Park exhibition. Is that not right, Laney?
Yep, Friday at the Brentford Steam Museum. People that don't know the Steam Museum, they might not know what the name of it. They would have seen it. Everyone knows that big Victorian tower, the great big, you know, brick chimney. It looks like a chimney on the Brentford skyline. So Friday before the Arsenal game, Bees United have funded this with the club's backing. And there's, you know, there's going to be a collection of memorabilia, shirts. There's going to be they've constructed a garden shed in there. It's like a fan cave.
Lainey, is your garden shed bigger than this?
Yes, my garden shed is not as big as Leeds' garden shed, obviously, but it's bigger than this.
Of course not.
There was a collection that was donated to the club. It's like hundreds of Brentford scarves and mugs, and they're going to be showing the push-up Brentford documentary on a big screen, and so fans are going to be able to go down to the Steam Museum. Full details are going to come out. I'll let Bees United put their press release and their launch, and we'll obviously amplify that. But I think fans are going to be able to go down to the museum during the week and on match days, and just kind of wallow in Griffin Park nostalgia. The Griffin Park book, I'm proud to say, will be on sale there. And the big Brentford book of the 90s. They're good people down at the Steam Museum, and I really thank them for allowing us to use some of their valuable space. And it's something that I think Brentford fans will really, really enjoy. I think there's always scope for a permanent Brentford Football Club Museum at some stage, but the location right next to the new ground, right next to Kew Bridge, where we were formed at the Oxford and Cambridge pub in 1889, it's such a brilliant position. And obviously that steam museum, or the waterworks, has been there even longer than Brentford Football Club. As I said, watch the space, watch the Brentford World Twitter and social media, because the details of how much it is to get in, etc., will be announced probably midweek.
Okay, excellent. So listen, a nice little roundup there, but then to be fair, we haven't done much over the summer, so we had to get a lot off our chest. And all I can say is now, it's not even 7 days and counting. It's about 5 days and counting now to the big match where Brentford play their first game in the Premier League. I'm very excited, but I'm trying to hold my excitement down at the moment now. But I know by the time it comes to Friday, when I'm not going to be getting any work done whatsoever, I'm going to be down in the Brentford area from about midday. And I'm going to be there with my mates, and we're going to do whatever we can do, river walks and all sorts of stuff, just to enjoy ourselves and to take it all in. I'm very, very, very much looking forward to it. So I'm Billy Grant, and I have been here with my man Lainey.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you too. And luck is to you. Check out all our podcasts on prideofwest.london. You're going to be able to check us out, because we've got podcasts coming like Wednesday. We're going to be back in the pub again. We've got Arsenal fan as well. Oh, the Arsenal fan. Tell us, who's the Arsenal fan, Lainey?
Darren Berry is going to join us. He's one of my Arsenal authors. He's just written a book called The Corona Diaries. It'll tell you all about that. It's one of the funniest books I've ever read about football. It's Arsenal centric, obviously, but it's about his not hatred, but his rants about modern football, his rants about what's happened during Corona. There's a lot more to it than a book about Arsenal season. It's, as I said, I just cry out loud when I read it, and I'm not even an Arsenal fan, so he'll be talking about that, but he'll also be talking about how excited he is to see Brentford in the top flight, because people that know their football know that we play some good stuff, and we're there. We're there on merit.
That's right. So we're back in the pub again. Like I said to you, post coronavirus, or not, so we're not post quite yet, but post lockdown time. So we're going back to what we normally did. So we're back in the pub Wednesday night, talking football with the away fans sitting with us, sipping a pint. We've got a post-match podcast that we always do. It's going to be obviously on a Friday night as well, after the Arsenal game, so we'll have that. That'll be up after the Arsenal game, either Friday night or Saturday morning. And then on Monday, we're going to be doing our weekend roundup podcast. So we've got three podcasts coming per week that you can get very excited about as well. Like I said to you, we're coming back to this. Don't forget that you can check us out on Ko-fi, which Ko-fi is like, if you like what you're doing, you can support us. Just go to besotted.com/beer as well, and we're actually thinking of throwing up a few options for our Ko-fi people as well down the line. But now that we've split back into gear, we'll talk about that within the next few weeks as well. Like I said, you go to Sky Q and go Besotted on Sky, and you'll get all your Brentford content as well. Don't forget to subscribe on all good podcast platforms. And don't forget, we've got the old Besotted, which is the Brentford Premier League t-shirts, which have been flying out the door. Make sure you get hold of them at the moment. Now we're coming back into season now. We've had, our suppliers gone on holiday a bit, we've been on holiday a bit, but we're all back now, so we can actually pump them out and try and get them to you in time for, well, I say the new season, but in time for maybe the Crystal Palace match, which will be in 10 days time as well. So go and do that at besotted.com, the Premier League t-shirts. But anyway, this is the Besotted Pride of West London contest podcast and the Premier League sort of pre-season friendlies are over. We've been to the real business zone now. Listen, enjoy your week, enjoy the countdown to the big game, and I'll see you on Friday for the Arsenal game, as we say, come on, you bees.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.